thank you very much for having me. I think, actually, I have to say, I was a little surprised to get the phone call. Thrilled. Thank you very much. But just a couple of quotes that I've been associated with. It's time to stop all the next generation catalog conversation and ensure that this is the last generation of catalogs provided for public consumption. Or the one people tend to remember, adding social features to a catalog is like staple gunning a satellite dish to a donkey. This talk brought to you by Chili Fresh. So, hopefully by the end of this conversation, you'll see why these aren't actually in direct competition. This will not be a catalog suck conversation, I promise you. By the way, when I put this out, someone actually found a logo for a company called Digital Donkey. I thought that was brilliant. All right, so let's spend a little bit of time, and it's one of those things that we have to come up with titles to keep people's attention. So what do I mean by killing the user and other necessary acts? Well, I'm going to give you the ta-da. I'm going to give you the conclusion first. One of the things that we really have started working on in having meetings is that rather than waiting for the 2 hours into the meeting to decide why you're having the meeting, maybe you could start with where you want to get to, right? What someone once said, when you talk an issue to death, recall that death was not your objective. So here is my conclusion. You are not a user. You are not a customer or a consumer. You are a participant in control of your world and able to shape your own learning and your own environment. And so are those that you seek to serve. So I'm going to do a little hair splitting, but this idea that somehow you are a passive receiver of stuff, now we all are in some ways, but it's become so amazingly pervasive through much of our culture and unfortunately through much of our profession where we see ourselves as librarians, as people who go and we find the right stuff and we send it out. I was just doing an ebook summit, and it just drove me nuts when people were talking about ebooks, where the main line was, well, we can't wait for Amazon and Apple and these folks to keep slugging it out so we can find out who wins, and then we can buy it. Stop it. It just drives me nuts. It drives me nuts. I was talking with some academic librarians. They were talking about how scholarship has changed, and that now these uptight ivory tower professor types, of which I am certainly one of, we've gone to the audacity of not simply publishing articles in expensive journals to drive ourselves bankrupt, but we've decided now to add blogging to the mix and all this other stuff. And this group of very well-meaning, and I love these librarians, but they sat there and they talked about how they really were going to they needed to keep up with the new formats. They needed to keep up with the new formats so they knew how to archive them. They needed to wait for the professors to figure out what the scholarship dissemination of information was so that they could then serve it, right? This is the famous French philosopher, French radical, tell me where that crowd is going so I may get in front of them and lead them, right? And I said to them, you do not want to wait for a professor to figure out how to disseminate information. We suck at it when we call it teaching and much less in scholarship, right? So my bottom line through all of this is that, one, as a profession, we need to be talking about how to lead these different initiatives, how to become partners with vendors and other industries and scientists and computer programmers and our public and our historical societies, equal partners in that, and people who drive initiatives as opposed to simply wait and take them. Now, I know I'm talking to folks who are on the tech services side of this. Right, so, you know, for the reference people, I go through all the fluffy stuff. But for you, I'm going to cut to the chase. Right, I'm going to, instead of going through a lot of theory and philosophy and all this about what it means to be participant and how that changes what we do, I want to give you a real example. Right, so, iPhone of the day. Now, before someone accuses me of being an Apple fanboy yet again, you can choose an Android phone if you would like. And what I want you to think about is I want you to think about how radically different this technology is from what phones used to look like 5 years ago. Right? And you go, oh, yes, because it's shiny and it's glass and you can break it. No. you can annoy everyone by, you know, telling them what apps you have. The new verb, iPhoning, right? When two people, like, magnetically pull to each other, it's like, well, what apps do you have? I don't have that one. No. It's like, hi, party going on, you know. And that was my wedding. All right. But what I want you to think about for a moment is the major difference that came, I don't want to say with, but one of the major differences when you look at the design of Android or you look at the design of the iPhone is something radically shifted. What radically shifted was instead of you getting an appliance that was designed for a function by some company that told you this is what your telecommunications experience is like, the introduction of the App Store was basically saying, here's the platform for you to design what your telecommunication experience is like. When you look at the apps that you have installed, and you look at my apps and you look at someone else's apps, they're probably very different. I mean, you know, it's like, well, yes, I can make phone calls, and I can do email, and I can read the New York Times, but really I play Angry Birds most of the time. If we had waited for an AT&T executive to come up with the fact that the, you know, Tetris and the stupid snake game wasn't good enough on an 8-bit screen that was this big, we would still be stuck there, right? And Steve Jobs probably didn't think about the fart apps when he was designing this, but it turns out they're fun when you have a 7-year-old son. Yeah, I'm going to blame it on him. Are you a user of this phone? By the way, the App Store, if you really don't want to be a fanboy, is nothing new. If any of my Linux peeps are out there, you know, we've known about distros for a long time. The fact that you can install any app you want from just double-clicking on it, you don't have to go buy a piece of retail. But let's stick with the telecommunications experience. Are you a user of this phone? And the answer is no, because you're not passively taking what's on there. You're adding stuff to it. So you may be a user of one of these apps, but if you're putting hundreds of apps on, or even 10 apps on, you're orchestrating your telecommunications experience. You're shaping what it means to be mobile. And that's a very different world than someone saying, this is what it means to be mobile, here it is. We were just laughing before about when we got our first cell phones and how big they were and batteries and things. But when we looked at cell phones, they're not phones anymore. And they're not appliances. And I am not a user of this phone. I did not buy this phone as it is. I bought a platform, and I shaped the phone around me. I've orchestrated this. I'm a participant in this phone. To the point, have you ever sat at someone else's computer, and you look at it, and you go, what were you smoking when you chose that background? Right? Oh, look, red and filled with blue text. Headache! Yay! Right? The idea here is that we naturally want to shape the systems that we use. We naturally want to shape the systems and how we learn and do them. It's a natural inborn act. And where it comes from is it doesn't come from the sense that there's some psychology behind it. It doesn't come from the fact that we just like to diddle around things. It comes from the fact that when we learn to interact with the world, we do it by having a conversation. Now, most of those conversations are with ourselves. And if you just sat there and said, what does he mean when he says we have a conversation with themselves? Who were you talking to? Right? You know, we do this all the time. Why am I here? Should I have that other piece of cake? Should I have his piece of cake? Right? We have these conversations all the time. This is how we learn. So we learn by having talks this way. We learn about having lots of talks this way. We learn about coming to meetings and have talks between a provider of software, a consumer of software, what have you. But that means that if you're having a conversation, there are two people at least in charge of that conversation. It takes someone has to stop and listen. Someone has to take turns in talking. It's an interactive process. And so when we engage in the world, we want to shape it. And that means that you're not a user. You're a participant. And that's why I hate the following phrases for the people who use libraries. Users, right? Drug dealers and computer scientists have users. Old joke, right? Customers, if they're my customer, I want a bigger tip. Patrons, because we're all about sponsoring Renaissance-era paintings, right? So Joan Fry Williams, one of my favorite human beings in the world, said, I have an idea. Let's ask them. And like during the middle of a strategic planning process, went in and said, hi, what are you? And almost universally, they said, I'm a member. I have a card. I pay taxes. I'm part of this community. I'm a member of this library. And that, I love that. I love that so much because it says there's some ownership in here. Think about Polaris Users Group. Polaris Members Group. I'm going to go for that. But anyway, you guys came here and come together not because you could just come and get talked to, but because you have a belief that you can influence what's going to happen with this product, that you are going to build some ownership into that product. That's a different relationship than when you go and buy Lay's potato chips. Right? You don't get to look at the potato chips and say, not crispy enough. Right? We don't do that. So I like the idea of members. Now, I've been thinking a little bit about what it takes for library systems and technology to get out of this sort of consumer mode, right? Because we all have probably heard at one point about the idea of user-based design. Whenever we come up with our web page, you know, web page sucks. Okay, why don't you like it? Don't like the blue. Let's have a focus group, right? So we all use user-based design. Now, what does that mean? That means we ask our users. What does that really mean? That means we ask enough users until we find the user that agrees with us, and they're our use case. Right? So, they're not good term. But I was trying to think, what does it take to migrate systems from this user mentality, someone sitting and consuming, something where we're orchestrating an experience, an event, a technology, a function, and handing it to them, to really suddenly something that they are a member in, they participate in. Because back to those quotes, the reason I think that the comment about the donkey and staple guns and animal cruelty and things is the idea that books are not social. They are dead trees. They don't sit up late at night with cocktails going, did you see that idiot who was reading me? Good God, right? People are social. That's why we were having a discussion about Chili Fresh when you're talking about the platform. It's not a social platform so that the books can talk to each other. Right? A Facebook for books. This is my cover. You know. What did you do today? I rotted. What? Right? It's about people are social. People have this conversation. So connecting readers makes more sense than connecting books. So I thought about this, and I've been thinking a lot around the idea of maps. Right? So this is an old roadmap. And, you know, we all have a story about a roadmap somewhere in our, you know, fathers cursing as they couldn't. Map reading skills was really folding skills in school, the whole thing. I shouldn't tell this story, but I'm going to briefly. My mother is a lovely saint of a woman. And we're driving to see my sister who's at, driving from Cincinnati to, University of Ohio. Oh, Ohio University. Gotta get that right. And we're driving, and it's taking a while. And so finally, she convinces my father to pull over. We go into the gas store, and they have one of these big maps sitting up there. I'm 14. She looks up, and I just hear her go, shit. First time I'd ever heard her curse in her entire life. And I was just like, I knew we were lost. All right? So the cartographers, when they were going digital, I have to imagine at some point there were conventions about, you know, how the digital conversion is going to kill us, how people aren't going to need cartographers anymore, how, anyway, the idea of going digital. And when you look at when maps got adopted, when the first stage, we look at how when maps went digital, we look at adoption phase. So just about any new technology, when you first introduce it, replicates an old technology, right? When Gutenberg was spitting out the press, he was making them look like illuminated manuscripts. And let's face it, when we came up with the card online card catalog, Mark was as close as we could get to working with a Selectrix typewriter, right? I mean, it was better because it was even harder to work with than a Selectrix typewriter. But the first Mark records that Library of Congress put in, they had the holes for the rod to go back and forth, right? So when maps went online, it was really adoption phase. It was, here's a map, online, right? And we began with some initial ways of adding some functionality to it. So now you could put in a route and it could tell you how to get there. And that was nice. And you could print it out and take it in your car and then your father could curse as he was looking through that. Right? But this is really an adoption phase. It's like Maps Plus. No one's going to look at this from like 1932 and go, oh, it's amazing. They're going to go, it's a map, right? That's what it is. So first stage adoption. And we look at some really interesting adoption that occurred. For example, now we have with Google Earth, now we have 3D buildings popping up and we have directions we can move through. We can see where the nearest place to eat is, etc. But really, this is still a map. It's a map that's cool looking, but it's a map. And the data is really a picture of a place, right? And that picture may be stylized and caricatured, or it might be very direct and representative, but it's a map. As technology begins to progress, you begin to look at the notion of extending the metaphor, extending maps. And so we have street views, right? So here we are. I'm sure one or two of you probably at some point went in and did this, spun around and went, a Hess station and the KFC. Okay, right? I've been to too many of these conferences. But this is different. Why is this different? Because this is different because we have a map, but now we've begun to connect and utilize the fact that we're in a digital environment. Right? Before, we were in a digital environment that allowed us to zoom in and zoom out. And instead of going to AAA to get our triptychs, it could spit out a triptych. But now, we've now combined two things that aren't naturally sort of together all the time. We have put pictures with maps. I mean, it's like the interface that a peeping Tom would develop for maps. But everyone go to like Google Bombs or, you know, the idea where you drive through and they just show people spoofing Google and all the things they're doing and accidentally find on Google Street Views and things. Right? But now, this is a map plus. But it's a map plus a whole different technology that no one could have combined before. This is something you could not do in paper. Very different. Right? So as we look at maps, we also begin to extend it in where we use them. Because now we realize that this technology and how we can use them can be put in different places. So GPS has saved so many marriages, I can't tell you. Right? Now we can drive around and it can tell us where we are as long as we're not in Boston, which I think delights in changing roads every day, but we can have it where we need it. It suddenly becomes something where it's a map, but it's convenient, it's where we want it, it's got street directions, it's combined the information. In reference, one of the things we talk about is being in the stacks. So when someone wants to know where the book is, and you're sitting in front of, you say, well, where are you? Well, I'm in front of K. Go left. Okay. Look in front of you. There you are. Right? The idea that we can use a GPS within a library environment. I mean, imagine you bring up the catalog. We're talking about a mobile app. We bring up the catalog on our iPhone, iPad, whatever, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, Steve Jobs, blah, blah, blah. And we look at this and we say, we want this book. And it knows where we are and it says, turn left, turn right, go up the street, go down the street. Now, what's even more interesting is with things like augmented reality, you lay this thing in front of it and it says, by the way, this book's not here. Would you like for me to recall it? So now we take this map idea and we take it where we need it. So it becomes quite of interesting. Now we move from the idea of simply moving it to digital, to starting to take advantage of a digital setting, to now truly adapting to this digital environment and innovating new stuff. So when you look at things like Foursquare, or you look at things like Facebook, you've got to give Facebook some credit here. Not only do they allow you to bring your phone and check yourself in, you can check other people in. I love this idea, right? I'm at the strip club, and so is Bill. Privacy? Nah, we don't need that stuff, right? But here's something where it's a map, but it's now doing something very different, right? Now what's happening is people are realizing that the maps are not simply to allow you to understand places, but they begin to be a forum in which social things can occur. That we can use this to do something very different than find our way. We can use this as a way of interacting. And that's a radically different shift from here's a picture of a place. Now we're to here's a forum for collaboration, for communication, for community. Things that were probably never intended originally with this map. And we can take this even further. So we can begin talking about the one in the upper left hand there is called Waze. And Waze is an open source collaborative GIS system. So as you're driving down the road, you have this app running on your Android phone or whatever. and it's mapping where you're going. And it gives you points. So if no one's ever gone over that road before, you get points. And then if there's a road that you're on that it doesn't know about, you can add it. You get more points. It's very exciting. And it's like Pac-Man. It literally looks like Pac-Man and you eat things. Right? But what they're using this with is they say, how many people have a phone sitting in their pocket? You want to know real-time traffic data? You want to know congestion patterns? You want to know when's the best time to take what routes? Let's work with real data and real user behavior as opposed to traffic cams and prediction algorithms, all this. Now we're doing something even more different. It's not a picture of a place anymore. It's how we interact and move. Augmented reality, I talked about that. The idea that as you're looking around, it knows where you are and says, this is what's sitting in front of you, and pops up information and where to go and what to do there. And this last one I just want to show you briefly. This is Bing. And it may be a little slow, but let me bring this up. So Bing, right, this is MapQuest, this is Google Maps, this is what have you. But what's really cool about this is here I am in Pike's Market. And so I can do what you can do in Pike's Market, but you'll notice as I pan around, every so often, a picture will pop up. Or I can make a picture come up. What's happening? Well, what's happening is, obviously, the software behind here knows where this place is. It's geolocated. And it knows streets, and it's got its standard street data. But then they looked at all this repository of Flickr images. So as you're busy going through Pike's Market and taking pictures, your camera's not only saying, this is the picture, it's saying, this is where you took it. And so what they're doing in real time is they're taking those coordinates, running against Flickr, taking all the public images, and putting it right on the map. So now what you're doing is you're using this as a photo album. And it gets even more fun because not only can they do that, but using algorithms, they can now say how they're joined and create a 3D model of it. So as you're moving through the streets of Seattle here, what you begin to do is it sort of looks like a little warp effect here. But that's the beginning of 3D. It's not just changing pictures. It's actually you see the buildings going beside you. So in real time, they're taking people's behavior, their social activities, their media, and their sharing. They're taking geographic information from maps. They're putting it together with 3D algorithms, and they're creating one of the most interesting information retrieval systems I've seen in a long time. Right? I think all too often when we think about information organization and how we can find information, we default to this idea of descriptive metadata and cataloging. But here's a way of finding images by where they're taken. Right? If you ever have looked at Shazam, it's a service, it's got an app, it's on the phone, you hum into it, and it tells you what song you're humming. Right? Or you hold it up to a speaker, because I can't hum, you hold it up, I can hum, you just don't want me to, and I can hold it up to a speaker, and it says, this is the song you're listening to. And when it's doing information retrieval, it's doing information organization, it doesn't do it in a descriptive metadata item-like way, it does it based on geographic information or auditory information or this kind of thing. And so now, when we talk about what is a picture, what is an image, what is a map, we've really changed how we think about this, right? We've ended up with a revolution, moving from the idea of picture of place to interface, to infrastructure, to innovate. So it's a little dark, I apologize, but if you look at the image on the right, this is what's being currently developed somewhere. Some car company has the intelligent dashboard, the intelligent windshield that you don't have your GPS in here. It's just projected right on the glass. You know, and I hate to get all science fiction-y here, but this isn't science fiction-y anymore. You know, you buy cars now that have heads-up displays, and they tell you you're about to hit something, you're about to back into something, you know? And you know, God help us that we run this on our current operating systems because it bombs, your windshield falls out. But my point of moving from that map to moving to that interactive windshield isn't one an all-in-one thing, but it means that we've also shifted from the sort of item picture world to we've shifted to a whole different view, right? So from pictures of places to an infrastructure that allows us to interact with the world and each other. So what do I take out of this as I sort of turn my eye and look at questions about what should our library systems look like? Well, I think there are three major things that I take out of it. First is we move from items to relationships. And I'm going to talk about these in a little bit more detail. We redefine what integrated means from monolithic to interoperable. And we open, and then you see the map world opened up to innovation and participation. which is once you sort of move through this, you begin to realize that everyone's allowed to have a good idea. And if you allow those good ideas to be utilized and create a marketplace and a reward system, you can develop things that you never anticipated. I mean, trust me, when the person who laid down the first map, accurate map of New York, wasn't at some point thinking, boy, wouldn't it be great if I could go through here and find all of the Howard Johnsons along the way? Or isn't it really great that I have this map? I can now check Bill in a strip club. Anyway, right? These weren't what they thought about. But by creating this open infrastructure, new ideas could come in, new thoughts, new participation could happen. So let's walk through it. First of all, the move from an item to a relationship. So I'm one of the other quotes that I get in trouble with often is that I said tagging sucks. And I got this wonderful little tweet from Tim Spaulding of Library Thing. Have you ever had a tweet argument? It's very odd to yell at each other in 140 characters. In fact, I didn't know I was having an argument until the end, right? He said, well, what do you mean that this sucks? And I said, well, this is what I mean. And then finally at the end, I said, well, yeah, this is an interesting conversation. Could I call you tomorrow to... Oh, you call me right now. You can just come on down. We go, wait, what the hell? You know? This is what I mean about tagging sucks. I want you to think of a couple of... I'm going to give you a couple of words, all right? We're going to play a word game. You might have heard this before. Word one, light, L-I-G-H-T. Right, this is the interactive portion of our day. How many people thought illumination? How many people thought not heavy? How many people thought set ablaze? Word number two, formula. Formula. How many people thought... chemical combination, mathematical combination, something you give a baby so it doesn't starve to death, grandparent, aunt, uncle, new mother. One last one for you. OMG. I'm just going to guess you didn't think Omni Media Group, right? It's, oh, my God, right? And not only did I know it was, oh, my God, but I could probably guess that you were instantly thinking of either texting or instant messaging, right? Now, what is going on here? Well, what's going on here is when we store things in our brains, when we remember stuff, we do not treat them as if Dewey has organized our brain cells. Because let's face it, if Dewey organized our brain cells, it would be bad. You know, yeah, misogynist, sexist. All right, we'll move on. Anyway, what we do is our brain stores concepts with relations to each other. And some of those are full of relationships. Light. We've run into that word all the time. We've got hundreds and thousands of relationships. And so when I ask you to pick one, your brain just sort of goes, yeah, that one. Best guess. Right? If I pointed here, so more of you probably picked illumination. What's that?
Bulb.
Fair enough. I didn't get to bulb. They're more than that, but very good point. Formula. Same thing. Well, were you scarred in chemistry or algebra as a child is which one you answer. But oh my God, OMG, has very few, but they're very strong connections. Like I say, maybe texting, maybe instant messaging, maybe teenage child. I don't know what it is, but our brain does that. So when I ask you to tag something, what I'm asking you to do is to pick a relationship that may be really strong to you and strip out all those connections and just slap it on there. So brother. Right? When I say brother, we probably all have a sense of what it is. By the way, do an image search on brother in Google. You will get Brothers. You will get Undercover Brother, which was an excellent film. You will get Big Brother. You will get sewing machines. You will get printers. Right? The idea is that brother has a lot of connections. And when you just give it a nice little anemic brother, right? It's like we look at our patrons and go, you need to do an article for tomorrow on education, and you search for education, right? And yet, what do? We turn around to our catalogs and say, let them tag, it'll all work out. Right? Sorry. By the way, it works in groups. And the reason it works in groups is because we learn language socially. So socially, we tend to mean the same word. So in the United States, if you use the word collaborator, people look at that as a good thing. If you use the word collaborator and you're in Germany, run. Right? So there's social. But imagine if our systems, instead of tagging items, these pictures are brothers, tagged connections and relationships. Same keyword, radically different relationship. I've given you a huge amount more information than if I simply said brother. So when we look at our books and we look at our materials, instead of thinking items, think relationships. And now what's very interesting about these relationships is they're very idiosyncratic to individuals, which means I have very different connections between items than you do. If you look at Amazon, you know, everyone who goes to redesign their website, we want to look like Amazon. It's got to be like Amazon. Simple, easy. And then you look at the page and just scrolls forever and ever and ever. And you go, well, of course they can find something. There's so many meaty keywords to work off of. That's actually a problem. Because if you look at what people are talking about, they're not talking about the item. Go and look at the comments around Harry Potter. Pick a Harry Potter book. Sorcerer's Stone, I don't care. Most of the comments are not about Harry Potter. They're about, I can't believe that she is such a good writer that she introduces stuff in the first book that you don't understand until the seventh book. Is that about the first book or the seventh book or the series? Same thing when you look at the Eclipse series, right? You know, I can't believe she went with one of them, whatever it was. The vampire was whiny in the movies. The werewolf was dumb in the movies. I didn't know why she would go. Anyway. Ooh. Okay. But my point is that the connections between them, if you ask me what's more like this, the holy grail of integrated library systems, when you get an item, you say more like this. The problem, the reason more like this is the holy grail is because it's so individual. Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, more like this, the complete guide to Legos and the complete encyclopedia of Star Wars vehicles. Why? Because that's what when I was dealing with my 5-year-old son, those were the three books that we read together. To me, they have a real strong connection. Right? So my more like this, my connections are very different. And one thing that we can take advantage of when we move to a digital environment is that we don't have to shelve all the books one way anymore. Which is the books can be the metadata. We can have Dewey in there. We can have Library of Congress in there. We can have Dave's crazy ass system in there. We can have all of these different ways of organizing and connecting things, and we can build filters so it doesn't get in the way. Now, before you go nuts and say, noise! No noise in the catalog! Noise! Right now, there are thousands of simultaneous conversations going on in this room. They're through radio waves. They're not getting in the way. You take out a piece of technology, you can tune in the one you want. So when you're listening to a radio station, you can even co-locate them. And so even if I have 93Q and I have 94.5 sitting right next to on my radio, it doesn't mean you have to on your radio. And I don't have to listen to them simultaneously to pick apart what I'm listening to. So connections. Now, the other thing about moving to relationships is right now a lot of people envision a library as a set of data that form collections, and the library itself is a collection of collections, right? So I've got a bunch of journal articles and full text materials. We put that into a database, and then somewhere on the website I have Database Finder, and what I love about it is if you're a really brilliant library and you have lots of good resources and you really want to provide a lot of data to people, you make it harder to provide lots of data, right? You know, it's like I have students who walk into the academic library and can't you just give me one? You know, I just want the database. And of course we know the answer to that usually starts with a D. But repositories, the idea that we get all these full text articles, these materials, we put that in our repository. We scan images, we put that in our digital library. We get our holdings data, our materials, we put that in a catalog. And then we wonder why people get confused. First of all, let us take a moment to realize that when you tell catalog to most people, they think JCPenney's, not books, right? So some of our language may be an issue here. It's also the reason that the other holy grail is so hard to attain, which is we all want the single search box. You all have a single search box on your site, don't you? Does anyone not have? No, don't identify yourself in this group. They'll pounce. Right? Why can't my single search box work like their single search box? Well, when you look at Google or Bing or what have you, they're choosing a bunch of documents. We've got a bunch of everything, right? We got reference questions. We got books. We got databases. We got maps. We got materials. We got MP3 files. We got all this stuff. Right? And if our acquisitions people get a budget, we'll get even more stuff. Right? The other thing that Google has, though, besides only having to pick one, is Google has the fact that they are all connected. Fancy word, a topology. There's a map going there. And so they can say, this one's pointed to the most, it goes to the top. Right? We don't have that because we are collections of collections. And so the Polaris people have done a great job staying up late at night when they get database results and they get book results and they get music results and they have to figure out how they interrelate, because Z3950 doesn't tell you. Z3950 says, here's a query, here's a query, here's a query. Ta-da! Right? So do you organize them alphabetically? Do you organize them chronologically by the color of the book? What do? Right? Imagine instead that instead of thinking of the library as a collection of collections, we thought of the library as a collection of members' collections. Of members. Right? So here's Dave, and Dave's got all his, these are his three books together. And what's really interesting is when Dave puts together his archive, when he puts together what this combination is, he's going to point to stuff that's in the library, but he's going to point to stuff that's on the open web, stuff that's in his own house, stuff that he may have found 3 years ago, and I have all that interesting connection data. Really interesting quick story. Eli Nyberger at Ann Arbor District Library had a patron come in and said, if I can search for a book in your library and I can know which branch is at, why can't I put my personal books at home into this catalog if I'm willing to lend them and treat my house as a branch? Right? So you go in, you search for a book, it says it's Dave. Dave, could you bring it next Tuesday? Sure. Now, if you look at that as really bizarre, and if you think of that as really odd, you're not thinking member. You're thinking you have users that are coming to use your collections. If you have members, their resources, their materials, their collections, their intelligence, their links are part of your collections. Why not? And so when you get a system that does links as opposed to a system that does items, you begin to get very sort of different looking interfaces. Right? So if you've ever been in a class, first thing you get is this great thing called a syllabus. And the syllabus is the first step of an instructor's conversation on a topic. It says, these are the topics we're going to cover, here's the order of them. Now you hand that to an academic library, and an academic library looks at the syllabus, takes all the citations out, throws away all that connective data about what the order was, why, what the connections are, how it's going to turn into information, and gives you a big list of, here's an alphabetical list of the readings. Why? That's the good stuff. Imagine if you took the syllabus and it said, read this book. And once you read this book, do this assignment. And this assignment led to this result. And you had this interesting connection. So when I log into the system, it says, here's your syllabi, here are the readings that came off of it, here are your assignments. And it starts to look like a portfolio and a course management system. But the point is, it's all around connections. I'm not having to navigate your system. You're facilitating my connections. Libraries need to get less in the job of collection development and more in the job of connection development. Connecting ideas, information, and people together to solve real problems. What's also, when you build systems like this, is suddenly you answer the question about how to do this. You've just had your members put those connections in for you. It turns out that 90% of the people read this book. The next thing they asked for was the DVD. So now when you say more like this, here's the DVD as your top suggestion. Not the exclusive suggestion, but the only, but one of them. It turns out when you ask for this resource, our reference librarians always suggest these three resources together. Here are these three resources. Regardless of whether they're a book or encyclopedia or music or a blog or an online discussion group or a person. Suddenly, we have this amazing, powerful mechanism through the integrated library system, through the catalog, to connect all our disparate data in a more powerful, more compelling way than search engines like Google and Bing can do. Google and Bing, when the libraries gave Google beautiful metadata, all the WorldCat, here it is. How many people find WorldCat records on a regular basis when you do a Google search? You don't. Because to Google, they look like really crappy, itty-bitty, non-connected web pages. We know that they're actually surrogates for very rich, interesting, collaborative conversations around books and materials and people. Capture it, put it up, and we can utilize this to dramatically increase how people find information. And that's not even what we're really trying to do, how people learn, how people make new ideas. So the next thing we have to do is we have to begin to redefine integrated from monolithic to interoperable. When the map people went up, instead of being the map, they became a map in a system. Now, we know this in software development. We talk about things like web architecture and service architecture. We know that we develop in modules that we can put together. We know that we don't start writing, you don't start writing a catalog by bringing up a text editor and going, chapter one, how I'm going to do circulation. Write for 3,000 lines, chapter two, how I'm going to do a catalog. Write for 38,000 lines. We don't do that. We write them in bits and pieces. So monolithic systems, this is one of the first monolithic systems called SAGE. It was the radar stations in the 50s. This is what was going to detect when the Russians came to bomb us. All these radar systems were set up around the northern Canada, because that's where they were going to come. And I know it's a little hard to see. That's a building. That big cube of a building is where they housed one of the computers, to handle that data. This is the idea of an integrated system as a monolithic system. I'll give you a few other examples. My personal favorite, the Forbin Project, Colossus, who took over the world. And, of course, the HAL 9000. So when we define integrated systems as monolithic systems, we get ourselves in trouble, right? I like the idea of an integrated system. This is the metaphor I like. That is actually a BMW built by kids in the shape, at full scale, of a BMW from Legos. But actually, it's not the Legos. That's an old metaphor. We're so used to that metaphor, we don't care. Everything's going to be a Lego. Yeah, I've heard that before. It's actually the car. If you think about the car that you're driving, it is an integrated system. Parts in that car, from the radiator to the seat belts that your father cuts to, lunchtime conversation, to the plastic gaskets, to the tires, to all of these things come from literally all over the world. From millions of manufacturers making the steel bearings that get integrated into the system, that get into the air conditioning that you hit the switch on. But here's the trick. When your car breaks down and you pull in, they take out the old part and they put a new part in. That's a very different thing than when when we built the first steam-powered automobiles. When it broke down, you built a new one by hand. Right? The Model T and the idea of assembly line manufacture wasn't just dramatic because the line moved the car. It was the parts were interchangeable. We are now getting to the point where our information tools are becoming just as interchangeable. That on the back end, how many people know the system that Google has in place to run its map server? How about Bing? How about your GPS system? I have no clue, nor do I care. And what's even more interesting, Google has probably changed it 12 times since I've started talking, and it hasn't interfered. Right? So what we're getting to the point is I can slap this system in and this system, and what we do is we create things like APIs, we create different way RESTful interfaces, different ways of separating out the guts from the function. That's a very different way of looking at this. And so now when you look at things like integrated library systems, what have you, up top those black dots are, those are your members, and they have their scheme. They have how these things are organized. This is related to this, this is related to this, this is related to this. Underneath it, those things are coming through systems like that digital library system, like an inventory circ system, like these kinds of different components. And those components can be swapped in and out. Right? We can figure out the best one and move them. So we're separating out these layers. What this allows us to finally do is to open up innovation and participation. Imagine for a moment that instead of thinking of Polaris as one system, it was a marketplace. That we literally was, Polaris was the infrastructure and it was the app store. So apps from libraries, from members, from third parties. The integrated library system becomes a value-added marketplace providing common functions, right? As one of our lunches, Bill said, you really don't want to write a serial prediction algorithm on your own. You don't. I would much rather you do that, right? Do that. But you probably don't really want to take the time to figure out how I bring in my, Nebo chat transcripts. And, you take the time so that, in version 8, we'll finally get to integrating data that you kept in that Yahoo group because your GeoCities is finally now supported, even though they closed down 10 years ago, right? But imagine instead that it was a way that you could go in and say, I need that for my members. Right? My members want geolocation. I work with geographers. My members want Amazon data. My members want connections and book clubs and materials. And rather than that have to be written into a monolithic system, I can pick and choose and pull it together, a la carte. And what's interesting is if they don't exist, I can write them. I can create them, and then I can say, you know, I wrote this for my members. If anyone else wants it, here it is in the App Store. And by the way, you sell it for a dollar. You guys keep 50 cents of it because you're dealing with all the transaction and the paperwork and can we get it through budgeting and do you have to do a purchase order and all that crap. And just hand me the other 50 cents. And I'll take that money and I'll write the next app. And I'll write the next app. And now suddenly when you talk about your relationship, a vendor relationship, you're not consuming. You're working together. You're truly a members group where you're participating. And I'll take this one step further, which is imagine now we did that all the way down to the interface level. And so we said, here I am, Joe user, bad word, here I am, Joe member, and I'm searching through my catalog, and it doesn't quite do what I need to do. No problem. I'll bring up the App Store. And so what I really want is I want that if there's a book in there with a geolocation, I want to see a Google map next to it. And where did that come from? Did it come from the person who wrote the whole catalog? Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe it came from someone else who wanted to do it last week. Maybe it came from your library that wanted to do it. Maybe it came from Google who wrote the app to do it. Right? And oh, by the way, if you can pull a keyword out, you can have Flickr photos pulled down automatically. Or, gee, I love this book. I would like to tweet it to someone. Or I would like to put it on Facebook. Or whatever that information is. And by the way, if it's on, if it's out, instead of putting it on a hold, I want to automatically drop an Amazon thing in there so I can just order it directly from here. Now, this may sound wacky, but how many of you are addicted to Farmville?
I'm not addicted to Farmville. I'm a purveyor of Farmville.
And the answer is, everyone on our stinking public terminal is addicted to Farmville. Look at Facebook. Facebook is a very, very, very function-poor environment. It does, like, three things. It keeps your identity, it does a wall, and it handles your friends. If you have filled out something about whether you're a millennial or you played Farmville or Hot or Not or Kitten Tech or whatever it is, you've done this. And it's not like Facebook sat back and said, we need a really good farm simulation application, right? Someone else did, and Facebook became a platform for them to develop it on. This is, in essence, their App Store model. Like I said, Apple didn't invent this concept. And this is what we're looking at when you separate out the functionality, when you make it so you can add these modules, when you make it so members can contribute. So what's really happening here is people are turning this from your catalog to their knowledge system. Right? Instead of me going to your catalog and I've got to sit through it, or, as was pointed out earlier, instead of going to Amazon, finding the book I want, and being too cheap to buy it, I go to my library to see if they have it, put it all together. And their data sits in here, and their latest report goes in there, and their Googles go in there, and their digs, and they stay in dig too. And their Facebook friends come in here. Now what's happening is they're shaping the world. In the same way that we started with you're shaping your telecommunications experience by adding apps and such, they're shaping their knowledge system. And so now we have that same view where we can move from the catalog to this sort of knowledge system. It's still got inventory control. It's still got CERC control. It's still got access to your acquisition systems in there. But on top of it is me. And now the catalog becomes not an inventory system I search for your stuff. It becomes a tool I use to organize my thoughts. And that is a radically different way of thinking about it. People move to Facebook. People move to these social environments not simply because they love putting up pictures of their cats. They do it out of a very selfish drive, which is I want to organize the world around me. But that's also a natural instinct. When you look at systems, when you change your backgrounds, when you put pictures up on your walls, when you decide where the furniture goes, as human beings, we shape the environments that we're in. If this is the environment that your member's brain is going to be in, why can't they shape it? Because the answer is if they can't shape it, they will consume it and they will leave it. if they can shape it, they will own it and they will fight for it. And this is a metaphor that works not just with our systems, but with our libraries in general. Why do people stand up when you close libraries and fight like hell to keep them? Because they're their libraries. Not because they're pretty buildings, not because they're full of books. They do it because they have a stake. That stake may be their after-school program. That stake may be where they get their material. That stake may just be they don't want to live in a community that closes down knowledge organizations, but they do it because they have ownership. Our systems need to promote that ownership and participation, not drive it away. So we've moved from inventory of items, which is a view of the library, which is cataloging with satellite dishes, to a move to a system that's all about a tool of conversation, a view of the member, and a knowledge system. And I come back to where I started. You are not a user. You are not a consumer. You are not a customer. You are a participant. And so are the people who use you. When we build a library service, when we build a library system, when we do after-hours programs, when we build a new facility, when we put up a new web page, we must do it to facilitate our users' learning and their goals, not simply what we want to do. The real problems that we seek to solve as libraries have nothing to do with books and shelves. The real mission that librarians are in has nothing to do with collections and artifacts. Those are tools that help us accomplish the ultimate mission, which is to improve society through facilitating knowledge creation within our communities. Libraries are aspirational institutions. When people build libraries, they build them because they feel it represents the best of themselves. When Salt Lake City puts in a building, they build that building because they say, as a community, think that knowledge is important above all else. And we build a library. When they look at renovating spaces, they look at inspiring places to be, not because it's comfy and they love spending the money, but because they're showing off what's the best of us. We need to be, as librarians, absolutely dedicated to their problems and their needs and their knowledge, and not our systems and our collections and our materials. Our members are suffering. Our members are dealing with an economy that's going nowhere right now. Our members are dealing with crippling student debt by the time they graduate. Our members are dealing with violence. Our members are dealing with how to govern. These are the problems that we should be part of solving. When they come and ask us for things, and yes, it may be Danielle Steele, and they may be asking for cookbooks, but they're asking us to solve a problem for themselves. And that problem may be as simple as, what do I do this afternoon? And that problem may be as great as, how do I save my life in an abusive relationship? One of the most inspirational times that I had in this profession is I sat in the lobby of the Free Library of Philadelphia as they opened a coffee shop. Coffee shop? The coffee shop that they were opening up was, the money for it was donated from the Bank of America, a corporate partner. The equipment for the coffee shop was donated by Starbucks. The food was actually being provided by a local baker so that they weren't seen as in competition with their own community. And the staff? The staff was staffed by people in a homelessness to work program. They didn't build a coffee shop. They built a service that when they looked at a need within their community, rather than worried about larceny codes and how do we keep these people out and what are they doing in our bathrooms, they looked at it and said, we can't solve this whole problem, but we can be part of it. What librarianship is not our buildings, it's not our tools, it is not our systems, it is not our equipment, it is not our artifacts, it is not our degrees. What our librarianship is that our dedication to improve the community and make the world a better place. Our role as librarians is to improve this society. And that will only happen not by serving people, not by just giving them and making them good consumers. You are not super shoppers. You are teaching them to be independent. You're teaching them to be radical change agents. You're teaching them to take over the world. That's an amazing thing to do. Our system should look like that too. Thank you very much.